Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and this week we'll be talking about Synapse's products that make it easy to open your own bank. Amazon offers a credit card for those that are underbanked or have poor credit, and a new financing vehicle using cryptocurrencies. Please hit subscribe to hear about this and more in the world of FinTech. All right, let's get started. We have some great articles this week and also some great people. Monica is back with us this week.
Thank you so much, John. Glad to be here.
Our returning champ, Monica. Welcome back.
Thank you.
And Steve.
Yeah, sure. I'm here.
He's here too.
I'm always here.
And he's really distressed about his credit score.
I am. It's no longer perfect, but yeah, that's not
Oh, man. You make people feel bad when you get to that Amazon thing. All right. Well, let's get started with Synapse. We've mentioned before about companies that offer APIs to let you do banking as a service, basically. You can add in a debit card just by connecting to that company, and you can skip the steps of developing all that in-house and grow very quickly. And with all the money going into fintech these days, with services like this, we should see a lot more new online banking products out there, you know, or different specialties even. I'm sure there's a lot of different niches. We talked about one that's going after the venture fund crowd that just got $100 million in funding. And I'm sure we're going to see a lot more of that kind of focus when you lower the bar to start a bank or grow a bank very quickly. This is probably bad news for someone like Chime, who's already gone through all the effort of building all that stuff in-house. And now you have all these companies that are making it easier to have startup banks. And one company that's offering services just got a $33 million round of financing. They're up to $50 million between that and around last year. Synapse wants to provide what they say are the Lego bricks approach to building services for financial institutions.
So they're basically selling picks and shovels in this fintech boom, right?
Yeah, well, they could go down. I don't think you can walk away if all your customers go out of business, right?
True.
So these are things like payment services, deposits, ID verification, KYC, all those things that you probably want to offload or get some help with when you're just starting your bank. You've gotten your initial seed round and you want to get off the ground. So I think that's great because that's going to introduce a lot more competition. And again, with all this money coming in, I wouldn't be surprised with more of these services that we don't see a lot more competitors to Chime and other online banks like N26 and Revolut that are coming to the U.S. as well.
So this makes me think that Synapse is saying, hey, we've got the technology chops. We can focus on that. But all of the boring stuff of getting a bank charter and finding customers, we'll just let you do that.
I was going to say the marketing becomes an uphill climb because, okay, now you have all these new banks. I'm thinking that they're going to target, be more targeted so they can focus their, you know, put the wood between, you know, one arrow that they can really get into a market in.
Targeted.
Especially one that's, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of underserved markets.
Yeah, absolutely. So targeted marketing with a commodity service, because if everybody is using the same APIs, then it's the same thing everywhere you go, which that's not necessarily a bad thing. A checking account is pretty much the same thing wherever you go.
Yeah.
And they're still quite very popular.
Yeah, well, it's like they're providing the skeleton. The way they say it is we want to be like the operating system for banking. And then all their customers would build all the applications on top of it. So there's a lot of work to do still on top of it to differentiate, to offer their unique features and products within their categories. So they offer things like even custody accounts, which is...
Nobody wants to offer those.
No, that's such a boring, unsexy part of fintech, but it's actually quite useful.
And there's not a lot of money in it.
Yeah, not at all. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just a wide assortment of things that they're offering. Hmm. So you can get off the ground much, much more quickly. So yeah, I think that will, with services like what Synapse is doing, and they have their own competitors, I wouldn't be surprised to see a lot of interesting business models come out of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is. I'll be really interested to see how this plays out over time in a world with so much cybersecurity risk, right? So, you know, historically, banks have built a lot of things in-house, and they've certainly had technology partners. But when you could be looking at a structure where, yeah, we have a bank, and we're a bank where we do the customer service and we do the marketing, but all of our technology comes from third parties. Who has the risk?
There's a lot of really interesting third party risk in this space.
Maybe they should have a blockchain based product.
Whoa! Which I know they have.
They
a
already
crypto
have crypto
wallet.
Coin wallets.
Yeah. So they're halfway there, yeah.
But not everybody has good credit, do they, Steve?
No, they don't. In fact,
so what should they do?
Great question. In fact, according to an FDIC survey from 2017. 25% of Americans qualify as underbanked or unbanked, meaning that they have no access to like a checking account or credit or
so
whatever.
So that doesn't mean they have bad credit, but they don't have credit experience.
They may have a thin file. And I think I also saw that according to FICO, 100 million Americans have a credit score lower than 550.
FICO, is that like a fundraising thing for cryptocurrencies?
It's fundraising. It's a fundraising initial coin offering.
100 million.
100 million Americans have a credit score under 550 points.
And
which
this is
pretty,
like 10 years of a economic expansion.
This is the good times.
Yeah. This is the good times. Yeah, yeah. I mean, this is the same survey that also cited that 40% of Americans couldn't come up with $400 for an emergency unless they had to sell or borrow something.
Yeah. Not on hand.
Yeah. But anyway, it's a huge market, and to help address the need of those customers in that segment, guess who stepped in? Amazon stepped in.
Oh.
Yeah. Is there a market that they don't like?
Isn't that awesome? No, they actually. It's funny because you wouldn't think of the core Amazon customers, or the Prime member, as being either underbanked or having a low credit score, but apparently here we are. So, you know, earlier this week they announced the release of their secured store credit card in partnership with a company called Synchrony Bank out of Stamford, Connecticut, which is aimed at, again, that population, that 25% of U.S. customers who don't have access to a good financial product.
Oh, did you say it's a store card?
It's a store card, yeah. So they have this secured credit card, which, by the way, means that you have to put money into it, and that's your credit limit. But it's a store card, so you can only use the card at Amazon. But they see this as a way to provide all their other amazing benefits of being a Prime member to non-Prime customers.
Oh, so do you get all benefits?
I could put a $5,000 deposit down to get Prime and be able to spend up to $5,000 of my own money all over again?
That is correct. But the argument is that it gets you on the ladder, if you will, to then become a regular Amazon Visa signature card.
If you make your payments on time.
If you make your payments on time, yeah.
So would a Macy's card.
Right. But I mean,
you might get rejected, though.
You might.
You might be.
You might not.
There's been credit cards for a long time.
They've been around forever.
I remember a late night TV commercial on secured credit cards.
Oh.
That's, restore your credit. Yeah. With the Bob's secured credit card.
It's the general has a new credit card, sure, something like that. It's a really interesting product because, again, it's a huge market, but the terms are kind of crappy, to be honest. The APR is almost 29%, which is usurious.
It's terrible. It's horrible. I would use a curse word. I used a curse word earlier. I'm not going to this time.
I wonder it can't represent the risk because
they've already got your
secured.
Credit limit in
it's
hand.
It's secured, so
maybe it's just further.
It's because like the service for improving the potential, and it does say they don't promise, but the, you know, some some history of on-time payments will hopefully help your credit score.
They say in as little as 7 months, you can graduate from this secured credit card to an unsecured credit card, and you can potentially improve your credit score. They also, which actually I think is kind of is a nice thing, they also give you a lot of budgeting and credit planning tools so that you understand where your money's going.
That's a good feature.
That's kind of useful. I mean, it seems like a very simple PFM type solution. And you do also, by the way, get 5% cash back on Amazon purchases.
Which are the only kind you can make.
Correct, yeah.
And the only kind Amazon wants any of us to make.
We should all be buying all our stuff from Amazon. I think I'm buying a bike lock tonight from Amazon. Random.
Oh, my God. Yes. I'll just buy it for you from Sports Basement. Come on.
Is there still? That's out of business.
No, it isn't.
No, it is.
We have our HOA meetings there.
No.
Because they are civically minded and they offer up space.
And a part of the community, yeah.
Yes, they offer
Unlike
up spaces
Amazon.
For you to use.
I don't see any kids in the Little League teams in my school, in my city. With like an Amazon jersey. It's all like the hardware store.
Yeah.
Or the ice cream shop, right?
Yeah.
They don't sponsor anything.
So when you graduate, is that when you get your deposit back? Your security deposit?
I believe you do as well, yeah. In as little as 7 months, you can get your deposit back, and then you can have this unsecure thing where you can just, you know, have a normal credit card sort of.
I'm sure they're watching you like a hawk.
They watch you like a hawk, absolutely, yeah. Huh. I don't know whether this is a good way to address this untapped and obviously underserved market or a way for them to squeeze.
Not at 29%.
No.
It's not a good way.
Or the second part of that is, or is this just a way for them to squeeze the lower middle class further? I don't know. I've also heard the argument that this
I
is
think
a way.
A way for them to acquire the lower middle class as customers.
Exactly. This is a way for them to attract that the person rather who would typically go to Walmart, right?
Yes.
So it's like the Walmart shopper. And bring them onto the e-commerce thing. I'm going to talk about this later during my final bite, but actually there's a really great slide in Mary Meeker's 333 slide deck on the internet trends that highlights how there's now a convergence between e-commerce and physical purchases, or rather the rate
a
of
synergy?
Growth.
Are you saying there's a synergy?
Synergy, whoa.
Let's get 80s.
let's get super 80s. No, it's the rate of growth is larger for e-commerce than for physical purchases. So I think that this is, they're kind of seeing the writing on the wall and saying, hey, these are customers that we can rely on to make e-commerce purchases going forward. So let's get them on the bandwagon here.
Right. But if they have to be able to make electronic purchases and Amazon doesn't want them to be doing it through PayPal or some other thing where they're doing it through a debit card.
Or buy it from any other store. It has to be all Amazon. They want to own everything you buy or they want to sell you, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Extending their brand out further.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, and what's interesting is like to have any credit limit of any workable size, you actually need to have no credit or bad credit, but enough cash to actually put down a deposit that makes the whole thing worthwhile.
I mean, it could be $100. You just buy a few things on Amazon and then slowly make your payments and eventually get your score.
That's not how it goes on Amazon,
is it? That's
not how it goes. And is Prime included or do you have to pay extra for Prime?
No, actually, Prime is extra.
Oh, full freight?
$119,000.
Full freight?
$119.
That's full freight. That's what Amazon Prime is.
I know.
For shame, Mr. Bezos.
It's not the way you would fund your startup company, that's for sure. But a way that people are starting to fund their startups are through a new thing called initial exchange offerings. This is similar to ICOs, initial coin offerings that we've seen in the past few years and which have kind of flamed out. Coin offerings have gone from $10 billion through the first 5 months of 2018 to only $1.2 billion through the first 5 months of this year.
I have to say, given the history of ICOs, that seems like it's $1.2 billion too
many.
Well, part of that is this new thing called an initial exchange offering.
It sounds actually like something that happens at singles night at bars.
Yes.
Initial exchange offering. Maybe.
Can I buy you a drink?
Can I
things go well.
Some bodily fluids with you? Yeah. John, what's an initial exchange offering?
Well, it's very similar to initial coin offerings, except that it's going through an exchange, which, depending on the exchange, is doing some level of due diligence on the offering.
Is this an exchange that I would know, like the NYSE or the NASDAQ? Or
no? Oh, no, 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 no. I thought this was going to be a tough question, but the answer is no. No, no. These are exchanges that are like Binance or...
KuCoin?
Binance. Okay. No, 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 not at all. Nothing so formal as that or regulated as that. In fact, these initial exchange offerings are for the most part outside of the United States because of the strong enforcement from the SEC, which is really quashed ICO offerings, basically the same as an initial coin offering, but with an exchange as an intermediary. So these are crypto exchanges like Binance, OKX, KuCoin. And the reason you may not have heard of these is because they are outside of the United States. So if you want to raise money with your new cryptocurrency, mm-hmm. you go to this exchange and say, hey, can you guys handle this for me? So Binance will do some check on what you're going to use this money for and how you're set up. You know, nowhere near what the SEC or regulated exchange or market would do, but supposedly some check. And
they look at the cooked books before they're finalized.
They and of course, read the white paper by the 23-year-old.
And of course, the more money that they raise, the more that they make as well, because they're getting a cut of the offering money as part of the service, right?
They have an inherent interest in giving you the best info they can. Yes.
Yeah, but if all of these IEOs that are going through your exchange are fraudulent or go south pretty quickly, I mean, obviously no one's going to trust you pretty quick.
Do all the folks who had their $15 billions run through their ICOs last year feel bad about that? They got theirs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. So it's definitely not any kind of guarantee, and it's not much of an assurance, but an ICO is directly from the company, which I say company, but it could be some guy in his basement in Jersey City that's got no intention to use that money for funding. There's probably a Ferrari more likely in his future.
Making it rain.
If you invest, yeah.
I don't know. For me, I call me a skeptic, but I can't really see the difference between an ICO, an IEO, and an IOU.
If it's the wrong kind of a company, probably not much of a difference at all. You're going to go to zero on all three of those. It is a help to raise money, like I said, outside of the U.S., because some people are trusting it a little bit more. If you've done a lot of transactions through your crypto exchange and they're the ones offering, it gives that sheen of credibility, right? And it's easier to market your fundraising through this kind of, it's not much of a different vehicle, but this vehicle. People have been warning about the risks. It's not that different. And, of course, the exchange doesn't want to be associated with scams and outright fraud.
Of course not, but they're willing to take the risk to get some commissions.
Yeah.
Yeah, they could be short, especially like a smaller exchange might be more short-sighted like that.
Also, I guess I just have my doubts about the credibility of the information that they're getting from these cryptos themselves.
There's no requirement. This is informal, right? It's just, there's no rules around this. It's not like
I can mock up a spreadsheet right now and be like, why don't you look at my investment portfolio, John? Would you like to vet me and give me a credit rating higher than Steve's?
Yeah. So, of course, we learn everything the hard way. Once some things go south, there's going to be more and more checks, and then eventually a regulator will get involved, hopefully at some point, and have some level of auditing. As we know with Enron, and there's no guarantees with any kind of investment, but at least some minimal standards, and that'll get beefed up over time. So I kind of see this as a way to address people's concerns, but very comprehensive way.
I'm still very concerned.
Yeah, no, it's been very successful. A lot of money has gone through IEOs already this year, more than with ICOs. And I think this is kind of like the first step of those developing towards a more formal regulated fundraising vehicle. But yeah, we'll see.
Or
but
they
for now,
could have just been
buyer
regulated
beware.
By the SEC. Yeah. That was always an option.
Yeah. Not for cryptocurrencies, because there's no regulation for that at all. That's why this has happened pretty much completely outside of the U.S. So
I guess what I'm saying is, if you really wanted to get
Moldova,
regulated, you could manage it.
Or somewhere with a much less regulation than here in the U.S. So let's get into our final bites, where we take a look at a number and the interesting story behind it, especially when Steve tells it.
Yes, this is quite a great number, if I do say so myself. My number is 333, which is the number of slides in Mary Meeker's Internet Trends deck. So this is a deck that, of course, has been famous for, I think, 20-odd years, right?
A while.
I saw that her first one was in 1995.
When she was at Morgan Stanley, yeah. So it's, quite a ways. I wonder how much of her year she spends building this thing. Because there's a lot of data on there. Well, she has interns,
she has people.
I know. She has people.
Yeah.
She
has more than interns.
She has more than interns, yeah. She has associates. She has, you know, GSB associates. But yeah, it's a really great document to kind of give you a macro sense of the internet, what's going on with e-commerce and advertising and banking, and it's really, really interesting.
Yeah, it's funny. Every year she comes out with this, but there's always some interesting thing, as if the world had changed so much in a year, but she always has some fascinating tidbits in there.
She does, yeah. I saw the slide today that was about the, again, that confluence between online and offline purchases. It's kind of meeting at some point. So, yeah, really, really neat stuff in there. I think I'm only on slide 87 by now.
I was going to ask you, have you looked at all 333?
No, it takes, and I think you can watch the whole video on YouTube, because she gave this at some code conference in Phoenix, but I wouldn't spend whatever the hour and a half that you need all of this, more than that, I assume.
You never forget, on YouTube, you can do things at double speed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Trick of the day.
Is it available on YouTube?
It is, yeah. It was some keynote speech at a conference, so you can watch
it. I like to do double speed with closed captioning on.
Speed reading.
Good idea.
Change my world.
Well, I picked up some tips from my husband.
Yeah, very good, very good. Anyway, that's my final bite.
All right.
Well, my final bite is 19, which is the number of blockchain as a service companies that are referenced in this article on builtin.com. And it's pretty interesting, actually. There's a very diverse group, as you might expect. There's a blockchain. So a blockchain as a service lets you use somebody else's blockchain to build your own products. And so, you know, obviously you don't have to do it on your own. So it's more efficient. They make it so that it's transparent, because it's a product that they're putting out there. And hopefully it's been vetted and tested, as we like to see here on the FinTech Newscast. Well, one of these started as a part of Disney, called Dragon Chain, the Dragon Chain platform. And that secures business assets and data. So it's spun off, and it's based out of Seattle. There's another blockchain as a service company called Block, B-L-O-Q, that works on business reconciliation, authentication, and security. And there's Factum out of Austin, Texas. Where are you from in Texas, Monica?
I actually grew up not in Austin, but I did go to school there.
You did go to school? Okay, great.
Well, Longhorns, or Hook 'em Horns, or whatever. Yeah.
I'll accept both.
Yeah.
So Factum works on managing and securing important documents, is their special niche. And the big boy on the block, the Amazon Web Service blockchain as a service product, which of course is you know, one of the largest providers for a lot of things. So if you want to find a blockchain that works for your particular needs, I recommend this article. It'll be in our show notes.
Speaking of blockchain, we've talked before about some of the maybe non-financial uses of it. And I was recently in Italy and toured a Parmigiano Reggiano factory. And I did not get the details, but already they can track basically down to like the bucketful that they start to make the Parmesan in. They know what dairy they got it from. So it was just really interesting to kind of see already how organizations need to track that kind of thing and how it could get easier and faster over time. All right, that leaves my final bite for last. And mine is 10,000. This is the number of startups that are estimated to be jumping into the world of fintech. The CEO of Curve has declared this his number, and he's also declared it as peak fintech. And since we already knew we were living through peak podcast, we are really experiencing like double peaking right now.
So we should have more than 10,000 listeners is what you're saying.
Who says we don't?
So what happens after the peak of any market cycle?
Well, I feel like usually you have the shakeout.
Yep, yep. The consolidation, the mergers.
Yeah. The failures. The disillusionment.
The flame outs, yeah.
Then you have the oligarchy. That's how it seems like it goes.
The survivors. Yeah.
So, more to come next week.
All right, that's it for this episode of the FinTech Newscast. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in FinTech news. And thanks for listening.
Bye for now.
Later.